18 minutes. Okay, good morning. 11:36 a.m. Make sure I've got this thing jammed in there. 11:36 a.m. on February the 1st, 2/1/14. Hi. Yeah, I'm walking. I'm out. I'm moving. I'm bundled up like it's 10 below because it feels, when I get out into the wind, it feels like 10 below. I'm pretty warm right now because I've been, for the last half mile or so, walking along with the wind at my back, so it's been not in my face. It's not been robbing me of heat quite as quickly as it was when I started. I still have ice in my beard. It's according to the thermometer, it's 22 degrees. According to my face, it's about 11. It's chilly. Yesterday, where have I been for the last 5 days? Mostly I've been dealing with snow and weather and shoveling, and yesterday I was sick. I'm one of those guys who's, oh no, I'm not sick. No, I'm not sick. No, actually I'm not one of those guys. When I'm sick, I'm generally happy to say I'm sick. The problem, of course, is that when I'm sick, the household chores don't really go away. I still have to take care of my wife, who is still recovering from surgery. I still have to take care of groceries. I still have to shovel the yard. I still have to do all those things. And adding in 40 minutes of walking in what would have yesterday been rather ugly conditions. That was just beyond what I was able to do. And I took a day off. I took the entire day off. I didn't walk. I didn't talk. I took a day off from my work. I didn't work on publishing. I played in social media. I played an EVE Online. I basically said, but the good news, there is good news. The good news is that I did finish the markup and loading of the markup to half share. If I can manage to find a couple of hours this afternoon when I'm not feeling like death on a soda cracker and when I don't have other demands on my time, yeah, good luck with that. I should probably be able to get at least the ebook republished, and then probably a good portion of the paperback. If I could get the paperback uploaded so that they do their 24-hour quality assurance pass on it overnight. I'm not going to ask for another physical copy, although perhaps I should ask for them to send me a couple, just for posterity. I've been ordering two books of each proof, one to leave pristine in my archive and the other to mark up. The markup version will also go into the archive. Full share, I'm not expecting full share to be as horrendous as half share. Most of the markup happened in quarter share, to be perfectly honest. And while I did do some minor brush up in double share, there was a lot of stuff that it was like, no, you can't leave that. That's dumb. It's typo-like. It's strictly speaking, not typo, but things like word usage, like, oh no, I didn't really mean to do that, and I probably am making it very different, but be that as it may. The story's still the same. Story still has Ishmael. He's still a prat. So yeah, it's all good. It's all good. I've had a couple of people say, well, are you going to make it available to us who've already bought the Ryden version so we can see what you intended your book to be? And of course, none of those people have listened to the book, so this book isn't going to agree with that either. It's like, give me a break. We're going to do what we can do. You feel gypped because you need to buy a $4.95 version to see the 17 words that I change? Okay, it's not 17 words. It's more like 4,000. No, I changed more than that. It's just contractions. I think I made like 28,000 changes just fixing contractions. And I'm pretty much guaranteed that I've at least botched one of them. Anyway, but yeah, that it's coming. It's coming together, and I have full share. It's waiting for me. I ordered two coffees. Said that the other day. I think they came on Saturday. They came a week early, 4 days early, 5 days early. So I've had it staring at me from my side table, staring at me balefully. I need to file some tax documents too. So yeah, I gotta write a check and get to the mailbox today before the mailman comes. I don't know if that's going to happen or not. When I get home, I've got to clean the kitchen. I've got to get lunch ready. And I think what I'm going to do is take the kitchen break and just do the kitchen up. I'm going to make chili for supper, so I'll make a pot of chili now at lunchtime. And so it can be simmering gently through the afternoon. And when people want dinner, all they have to do is scoop it out. So, no secondary kitchen routine for me today. And there's this guy on Google Plus, on the writer's discussion group, that and he feeds into the, or off from the Wendig paranoia about all the crappy books, and how if you're a serious author, then you should never publish a book that is not the very best it can be. And of course, the answer to that is, so only the people who have the hubris to declare that they can't write a better book should publish. I mean, that's what it comes down to. That's what it boils down to, because in the process of writing a book, you learn a lot about writing, if you do it right. If you're not doing it right, then you don't really think you're publishing crap, so you don't think this stuff applies to you anyway. But in the process of writing the book, you learn something new about how to make it better. So you edit the book and you make it better. And in the process of editing the book to make it better, you find more stuff that you can edit to make it better. Until you get to the point where one of two things happens. You never run out of things to make it better. Or you polish it to the point where it no longer has any bite and nobody really cares about the book anymore. It's beautifully polished. It's still a turd. And while, yes, I know Mythbusters did an episode on that, it's sort of missing the point. It's sort of missing the whole writing is not a goal. Writing is a process. And it continues. And the people who do it, and this is just my opinion, but the people who do it really well are the people who know they're not doing it really well. I mean, I suppose that's like, it's sort of like patting myself on the back because I know I don't write well. But the reality is that I know I can always write better. And the process of writing proves to me that I can write better. My next book always has to be better than the last one. And so far, one might argue about Half Share, but so far, that pretty much has been the case. Each book has been a little better. Being able to tell fantasy stories instead of just science fiction stories helped me craft better science fiction stories, I think. I know writing Ravenwood helped greatly in the creation of Captain Share and of Owner Share. You know, it's like, we can agree to disagree on whether or not the ending to Owner Share was the right ending or not, but it was the ending that I thought had to go on it. Okay, next ending won't be that way. Not because I don't think that was the right ending, but because in writing that ending, I've learned how to make endings better. I think the ending of the Ravenwood, of the Tannis Fairport trilogy, the ending of Herman of Lammas Wood sort of underscores that. There's a certain cliffhangeriness about the end of Zyfiria's Call. There's nobody's in danger. We've come to the end of a portion of the journey. It's the middle book of any trilogy, particularly if the quest trilogy is the travel book. And so we came to the end of the travel, and now we're set to launch onto the next great adventure, should you decide to continue along the trail. So, you know, it's a bit cliffhangery, but it ain't a cliffhanger. The only question left unanswered is whether or not Gertie will talk to Tanith when she gets there. So, yeah, I mean, from writing that book, from writing The Ending in Ownership, from constructing the book the way that I did, and constructing it in a way that I am required to write more Ishmael Wong books, not by fans, but by me, by the fact that the story isn't over. I mean, that was the ending that I knew how to do. Could I have done another ending and had it be more acceptable? Probably. Could I have done an ending that would have achieved the same goal without the trauma? That's the part I still don't know. That's the part where I'm still having trouble. That's the part I still struggle with. So this idea that, you know, you should pay your dues, you should write until you're good enough to publish. And the problem is, who's going to say whether or not you're good enough to publish? That's the problem. That's where it really falls apart. Because Wending holds that the problem is that there are no gatekeepers. He holds that this term gatekeeper is a misnomer, that, you know, there are no gatekeepers. That's a myth. That's a figment. In a certain sense, he's right, because in a certain sense, the problem really isn't the gatekeepers. The problem is the number of gates. And his whole argument swings on the assumption that if your book is good enough, you will sell it to a publisher, and the publisher will produce a quality book, and that quality book will sell books to bookstores, or the publisher will sell books to bookstores, and the bookstores will sell those books to readers, because it's a quality book. Now, the reality is, a publisher can only publish so many books a month. And if your book, no matter how good, falls into that month, they can't buy it. It isn't a question of how good it is. It isn't a question of whether or not it's an acceptable, or whether or not there are enough commas, or few enough typos, or the story is structurally in keeping with the generally accepted story tropes of your genre and subgenre. Your hero is heroic and your villain is believable, and whatever else they want to layer on here for what makes it of a minimum literary quality. Arguably, none of the Cher books fall into that category. Start there. And I have to move on. So, yeah, this idea of if your book is good, then it will be published is such complete. I'm going to swear. So if that offends you, block your ears for a second. That's complete bullshit. I mean, it's really stupid. It completely ignores the reality of the publishing business, while at the same time arguing that publishing is a business. It ignores the operational constraints on any business in terms of what they can do and what they can't do, what they can produce and what they can't produce. It's ludicrous. It's insane. You can't have it both ways and expect it to work. It's not how it goes. That ain't the reality I know. So perhaps it's my reality that's flawed. The whole argument, of course, is that the rising tide of crap is sinking all boats, not raising them. An argument which I find foolish on its face, and typically only coming from people whose sails aren't really going where they think they should. See, the thing is, the people who are really successful indies, A, don't publish crap. And for all the flaws in my books, they're not crap. For all the bad covers that I have put out, I have recognized the flaws. I have taken steps to rectify them. I've put out some good covers. Arguably, the Ryden covers were pretty good. They were not, I would argue, they are not good covers in the concept of what an ebook cover really needs to achieve. They were pretty in the full size. And thumbnail, not so much. The thinness of the Trajan that Michael used was is a bit problematic in thumbnail size. But they were pretty. Yeah, if you got to see them full size, man, they're gorgeous. And they did relate to the books in that the cover had the ship that was in the book. So yeah, there was some, you know, there was some good stuff, and I can't argue against them because, man, did I squee like a schoolgirl when I saw them. I did. There's no question I did. They were better than I could have imagined. But when it came time for me to design my own, I had to look at them from a much more objective standpoint and say, yeah, they're pretty, but do they do what I need? Can you pick them out of a lineup? If they show up in the also bots, do they stand out? And no, they didn't, because when you're looking at them in something less than postage stamp size, they just sort of blanched out. They sort of disappeared. Now, my new covers, I know I really like them. I like them because they are a cover set of graphics in a series. They correspond to the movement upward and outward that Ishmael goes on his arc. They are in keeping with the science fiction genre. They do not have a ship on the front, which was a choice that I made on purpose because I didn't want people comparing the ships on the Raiden covers to the ships on my covers, because I'm pretty sure I couldn't do as well. I'm pretty sure I don't know any artist that I could afford who could do the ships as well. And I still had two covers that didn't have any ship at all. So yeah, that was a business decision. Was it a crap decision? No, I don't think so. Could it be better? Well, of course. Jesus, of course. That's the point. It can always be better. And if you argue that it can't possibly be any better, then you're not actually doing it. All you're doing is following a recipe. All you're doing is following a path. And the point is not to follow the path. The point is not for self-publishing to be McGraw-Hill. It's not for self-publishing to be Macmillan. We shouldn't have the same criteria for success. We shouldn't be looking at the same kinds of things when we're evaluating, because it's not the same. It's a different game. Sure, the readers are the same, but it's a different game. There are a lot of people who watch both rugby and soccer. Which one's better? No, they're different games. Sports aficionados like them both. Why? Not because they are the same, but because they are different. So this idea that, you know, we ought to be judging books on typos per page. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a certain argument that says if you can't do a spell check, then yeah, don't expect a lot of people to be wowing about your book, although it seemed to work for Shades of Grey, so, you know, there's that. But it goes back to a deeper aesthetic, it goes back to a deeper ideal, and that ideal is that beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I mean, it goes back to, what is it, Plato? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. It goes way back. Maybe it's not Plato, I don't know. Plato talked a lot about beauty and truth, so I'm going to tag it on Plato until I can get home to look it up anyway. But, yeah, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. What makes some of these arguably substandard produced books so enchanting? What makes them so engaging? Why did I keep reading P.S. Powers? It's crap books. Total crap books. But I kept reading them. Why? Because there was something in the story that drew me forward. There was something in the story that drew me on. There was something in the story, something in the character, something in the plot, something in those stories made me keep buying them. Oh, really? Yeah, 19 and a half minutes on the second half. That's not great, but given how much snow I'm walking through, that's probably not bad. At any rate, this whole argument is one that it has me seeing red, because what they're basically saying is that I shouldn't be writing, that I should be waiting until I can sell my books to a publisher and get for them only enough money to pay my taxes and require me to get a day job to support my writing habit. And I categorically reject that as a basis for who gets published and who doesn't, and who gets to participate in this marketplace and who doesn't. It's just... I guess for me, it's ethically anathema. It's morally wrong. At any rate, I made the walk. I did the talk. I'm at the back gate. Tomorrow's another day, and the snow doesn't pick up very much. With any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.